Hey, it's Martin Griffiths. Welcome to another episode of the Manufacturers Make Strides podcast. And today I'm interviewing PJ Tezza. He's a CEO of Modvans, who are transforming vehicles, standard vans, into recreational vehicles in all sorts of interesting configurations. He's taken that from a startup in 2018 to the place where now they're at 10 vans a week, and they've got plans to reach up to 100 vans a week. So he's got all sorts of stories about how to take his knowledge as a software programmer in Silicon Valley, about how to create a lean startup and how to apply that to a manufacturing company, and what advantages and disadvantages that's got, and how you can build a really interesting new style of automotive company with some of these ideas. We dig into all sorts of things in this episode, so let's get straight into it now. So, hey, great to have you on the podcast. PJ, how's it going today?
It's going great. Thanks for inviting me.
Brilliant. Yeah, really excited to dig into some of the history of Modvans and how that started. But really, I just wanted to start off with a little bit of background about yourself. Where did you start off your career? What led you to the point where you decided to compete with the big boys and start your own automotive company?
So I'm actually in my 50s. So I've been, had my career for quite a while. I graduated college with a degree in physics, undergraduate and a minor in math. And I worked my way through college as a software engineer programming. Programming was pretty new then. Like in my college, it was like a sub department of the math department. And it was basically if you were got in trouble in the math department, they'd make you teach computer science classes. And that's how they were taught too. Some of the worst classes I ever had were in there. So I knew I didn't want to stick it out with a computer science degree. So I got into physics. I was intrigued in it. And then, but as I was working my way through college, I guess that's when I learned like how to direct my creativity into a way that is kind of in alignment with societal goals of, you know, having a career, and all these other things, because I was really good at programming and I liked it because it was creative. I get to work with people. It's an engineering, you know, where you're creating a solution, you know, with technical things. It is engineering. You know, people just kind of debate about whether software is a true engineering discipline, but, you know, having done real engineering, whether it's electrical or electronics and mechanical at this point, I can, you know, just say, you know, it's kind of it's a different facet of the same problem where you're solving these problems in the real world with technology. And it's just a different way of doing it. And that game of making trade-offs between costs and performance and all these different trade-offs, it's the same in all engineering. So I discovered early on that I really liked engineering and I had a really successful career in software. I've been involved in a lot of startups. I've always been really excited about the creative aspect. And so that happens the most in startups. You have the most flexibility. You kind of start with a clean slate and you're like, where are we going to go? Some people are intimidated by that clean slate. They can't, it's too much freedom, but I've always really enjoyed it. And just figuring out getting in there. And so, you know, I worked with a lot of startups. And then, we can kind of get into it, but, you know, eventually I built a vehicle for myself, one of these camper vans that my company Modvans works on. I built it for myself. At the time I was a software engineer. I was kind of not my peak of my career, but I had worked my way up the career ladder. I was working for a good startup and I built this thing, and it was a ton of work. It was way more work than I had, had imagined at the start. I figured that I put at least 1,000 hours into it. That's kind of somewhat keeping track. And at the end of it, I mean, it was fun. In the middle of it, it was a slog. And I just was like, I remember thinking to myself, I was like, you know, if I don't like this, I should just do something else. I was like, no, I do actually like this kind of, it's challenging. It is a challenge, but I do like the kind of figuring out and doing it. And when I got all done with it, I was like, man, that was so much work. Hardware is so much harder than software. That's it for me. I'm never going to do that. That's it. As things happened, I had that van, I completed it, and it had a lot of unique things to it. It was modular, so you could take the components inside and out. It had a pop-up top, which was pretty unique design. It had a, you know, AC on top. It was a full featured thing. That's why it took me so long. And also, you know, my background in physics has served me well, because I can do the electrical work. I understand the theory of, I'm not an electrical engineer, but I understand the theory. Mm-hmm. So I can always take that, you know, physics experience and kind of, I've always been able to like adapt myself. And in software you do. So you go into all these different engineering environments, whether it, you know, at one point it was textiles. I was working in textile plants, yarn mills and carpet mills, but I was able to understand the chemical formula and the mechanical formula they were giving me, because I had this kind of generalized background of modeling the world and math through physics. So anyway, so that translated into me having this ability to kind of build this van. And so, like I said, when I was done with it, I was like, man, that was a lot of work. That's enough for me. you know, cause my friends were like, oh, maybe you should sell these. I'm like, no, too much work. So anyway, what happened was, though, I drove that van around for 6 months, and everywhere I went, people were just like, they would, you know, they come up and they're like, hey, can I see inside your van? Where'd you get it? Where can I get one? And I was like, you can't.
So can I ask a question? Because had a look on the Modvans website of the type of vans. And yeah, let's just describe them a little bit of what, you know, of what they're like and what people use them for. Because they seem to, because like, I know in the US you can get, you have like huge RVs that you can like take the whole family out in.
Yep.
What I think what you're talking about now is like kind of a standard van from one of the big automotive suppliers, and that's it, you're modifying it to go on trips and with some living facilities in the back. Is that right? That's correct.
So from a like technical standpoint, mod vans is what's called in the US a second stage vehicle manufacturer. That means we buy a chassis that's already completed a lot of the certifications. In our case, all the certifications required to be, you know, on the roads as a legal vehicle in the US. Yeah. And then we modify it to become something else. In our case, it could be a work truck. In our case, we build what we call a multi-purpose vehicle. So that was like in the beginning, I wanted something that could fit, you know, go for camping, because I do love camping. Mm. I'm a rock climber. That's my big hobby. So, and then, you know, I like to snowboard in the winter. So it involves a lot of driving, especially in California. It's a pretty big place. So we drive around a lot as a state. And so I wanted something that I could use for that. But at the same time, I just couldn't bring myself, you know, as an engineer, I guess, you know, it was too much to have a dedicated vehicle for camping. And actually, I tried it for a while, and I realized I didn't like it. It was expensive and I had to go get it and deal with it. So I was looking for that one vehicle that kind of could fit my regular daily life. And then also go camping on the weekends. So that's what Mod Van's kind of the heart of it is. And we have ended up now, we have three different models, because what I realized in building the one for me is that there are, you know, different people have kind of a different idea. You might have a family that has no kids or one kid or, you know, four kids or, you know, however many kids you have. So that kind of defines also somewhat what kind of vehicle you want. You may have different hobbies than I do. Some people love going on their bicycles. I, you know, people spend incredible, I don't know about in the UK, but here they spend like incredible amounts of money and they'll take four bikes for two people on a trip, you know? So they have different needs. And so that's where, you know, I built the modular features for myself, because I was like, oh, I want to have the seats to be able to come in and out, the beds come in and out. So I could use it for different things, moving stuff, going to pick up supplies at the home improvement store, things like that. And it turns out that is, you know, people like that, you know, that, and we've carried that design philosophy into our product line at this point, where all of our three models that we have today are still modular. You can still take everything out and potentially use them to haul bikes inside, motorcycles, or, you know, all your kids and dogs in one big trip.
Cool. They sound amazing. Yeah. They look brilliant. So tell us a bit about the challenges then. So you're a software engineer, you'd built your own, it'd been a bigger job than you expected. Yeah. Yep. What made you start the company, and what's it like building a manufacturing company from scratch then in that situation?
Yes. Let's see if I can, I'll tell you a little bit about the story of the transition. So as I said, I would drive my personal van around and people would be like, where can I get one? And I'd say, you can't. And then Lori and I had a startup that sold to another bigger company. And the net result of that was that I wasn't working a lot at the time and I had a little bit of money. not enough to retire or anything, but I had a little bit. And also I had some flexibility where I could live. And then I started doing a little bit of consulting on the side. So I really didn't have an urgent need for a job right away. And so my wife and I moved from Northern California, where I was living at that time, down to Southern California. And when we came down here, we moved into this town. Oxnard is the name of the town we live in. And to be near her relatives. And also I thought it would be nice to live near the beach and, you know, see what Southern California beach life is all about. And when we got down here, we both kind of realized, oh, there isn't really any jobs for people like us here. You know, it doesn't have a big, you know, tech community. It doesn't have a startup community. There was literally like one company that had kind of compatible jobs, and I wasn't willing to travel, commute long distance, like into LA for that kind of job. So, you know, basically we were just scratching our head, like, what are we going to do? And I was like, well, you know, I could dust off the mod vans thing, or we sure do get a lot of questions about it. And once we moved to Southern California, even more questions, because more people ask about it here. So literally, you know, because of my tech background, I can do certain things. So I built a website that, you know, could take orders, and I just put it out there, and I was like, okay, you know, if I can get enough orders with deposits, I'll give it a try. Why not? So that was what started. We got great response right off the bat. It took me a couple little tries, but I eventually figured out how to sell them. And my goal was, I wasn't going to start the business unless I had 5 orders with deposits. I ended up with 10 after 2 months, orders with deposits. And, you know, I kind of looked around. I was like, I guess I'm going to do this thing. And we leased space. And I kind of started the way I would start a software startup, you know, kind of minimal amount of space, minimal number of employees. And that was, you know, the genesis, those 10. And I would very much say they were early adopters. It was really, you know, my attitude at the time was, you know, I'm not going to do this thing unless I can kind of do it, you know, easy and simply in the way that I think it should be done. So when customers would call me and they're like, hey, I want to talk to your other customers before I commit to you. And I would say, well, I don't have any other customers. You have to decide, you know, are you an early adopter, or you want to wait to see how this thing unfolds? And so out of that, you know, I might've talked to 1,000 people, and I ended up with 10 people who were like, yeah, I'm an early adopter. I'm ready, willing to take a chance and give you a few $1,000 and see how it all works out. Cause what you are building here is unique, and we're excited about it.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, so yeah, you did take a very much like a software. So you basically had like your minimum viable product, and and you didn't.
The minimum viable product was the my van and the website, right?
yeah. So amazing. Yeah, that's brilliant. Do you think then your kind of software, your idea, your the skills you've learned in managing software, kind of like product development and projects, do you think that's put you in a good position to with this manufacturing startup plan?
I think it gives me some advantages and some disadvantages, and I can kind of go through a little bit of each. I think on the advantage side, really, you know, and we were talking earlier before the podcast started about, you know, reading about Elon Musk and his company, SpaceX and Tesla, and me kind of musing in my own head, like what's different about when a software guy comes into hardware. I think it's a matter of not, I was just listening, but not kind of accepting the status quo. And I'm going to give you one like very specific example that I went through. When we launched a company and I had the 10 orders, originally I was planning to outsource the manufacturing of the pop-up tops to somebody else, to another company that would basically be a competitor, but I did know that they sold the tops separately. And when I had the 10 orders, I was like, oh, well, you know, that really makes sense for me to try to design the top that I think it should be rather than just accepting what's on the market. So that started the process of me building molds and learning how to build molds, because I didn't know how to make molds and make composite products and stuff like that. So it started this big learning process. I don't think that's really unique. I don't think, you know, being a software guy, maybe I was dumb enough to tackle more than I should have. Maybe that's where the, you know, it's a kind of an advantage in a way. You don't know what you're getting into yet, but you know, I just kind of looked at it from first principles, and I was like, well, you know, I've researched this stuff. I had a few friends that I was able to lean on to get some information, and they seemed to think it was possible. So I was able to tackle that from first principles. So anyway, so I made that first mold, and then we made our parts, and, you know, kind of went through that. So, but that's not really the story. The story is that, later, we decided to make a new mold for the same part We had realized that the old mold had some defects in it, and we wanted to change a few lines. We want to make some improvements, you know, and so it made sense. And so I hired a company that has done a lot of work in the automotive industry and aerospace industry to make that mold. And they had stuff that we didn't have. We had a three-axis CNC. So the way I made this 10-inch, 12-inch tall part was I built it in 2-inch sections, and then I glued all the blocks together and then sanded the whole thing down. It took way longer than it had to. So I found a company that had a 5-axis CNC that was 10 feet tall and could cut, you know, they could cut anything they wanted out of that, out of one block of foam. And they had made molds for many companies. And, you know, this is what they did for a living. So I hired them to make this mold. We set a budget, you know, I said, okay, that's fine. Well, so what actually happened in practice was they took way longer than, in my opinion, was necessary to make that mold. It took, you know, from me doing it first principles, just starting and putting my head down, you know, I made a mold, and I would say it was about 5 days worth of a team effort of work, you know, let's say I call it a 80 hours of work, you know, 100 hours of work, you know. So after I had been with this company for like 2 months and things weren't moving along, I started calling them every week. I was like, hey, what's going on? You know, oh, well, we're trying to glue the blocks. You know, we did some new thing and it's not working. And, you know, so my point in this story is that working at it from first principles, I kind of really started to understand that they were used to a much slower pace of things and not really completing projects at the minimum level of time necessary. They were kind of used to, oh, well, you know, we'll do all these other projects over here and we'll do all this other stuff. And well, your project, we had problems with the gluing block, so now we had to slot something else in. And so you know, coming from the software world, boy, we you know, that just is, it's a totally different mindset, especially startup world where, you know, we don't have the luxury of doing things like that. If I have a project here that takes too long, we'll go out of business. You know, I mean, it's just simply that if I have an engineering project that goes so far over budget, if it goes a week to 4 months out of budget, that would put me out of business right now. And so, you know, it kind of has this attitude adjustment where, you know, you're like, well, I need to really look at this and see what's going on. And if I don't agree with it, I'm going to really investigate. And so I think that's a big advantage. So that, I think that mindset, and I really saw it in Tesla, is like, you know, we're just going to tackle this from the ground up and not accept that, oh, well, a mold like this should take 6 months, you know, working with people in China should take 2 years, you know, whatever the status quo is there, you know, that you have to accept parts that you don't like just because, you know, you're not going to make them yourself. So there's things like that where in software, you know, we don't like it, we just make it. Now it's a lot easier in software because all you got to have is a laptop, right? That's what my wife and I have this joke, which is like, software startups are so much easier. All you need is like an apartment and a laptop. That's it. A coffee shop and a laptop, maybe, you know? So there's a huge difference there. Things are easier. Okay. So one of the big negatives, I will say, is my lack of production knowledge. So in software, when we want to make the second copy of this beautiful program that took us millions of dollars of man hours to make, well, literally we don't do anything. We just, you download it from the same link that you downloaded the first copy from, right? I mean, boom, problem solved. And that's why venture capitalists love it. In production environment and manufacturing, we built one van. It's amazing. It might be the best van ever, but to sell to customer number two, I have to literally build another van. You know, it may not be as hard. I may have learned a lot of lessons that make it more efficient, but I still have to build another van. And so that has been a big challenge for me, to be honest, to understand how much effort goes into, you know, like building the prototypes and coming up with that and then getting that into production, and not just getting it into production, because I think we figured that out, but maintaining that production over a long period of time where the inventory has to come in, the manpower has to all be there. I mean, I'm learning. I would say that I'm learning, but I would say that not having that background was definitely, it was an eye opener. And I feel like I made some mistakes because I might have, you know, underestimated some of the challenges there.
Yeah, I think that's natural, isn't it? You know, I think as well, like people who go out and start companies, I think by nature are like kind of more on the optimistic side.
They have to be optimistic.
We can do that. Let's do this. Yeah, you have to be to, you know, to bounce back. So yeah, did you bring anyone on board with a manufacturing background?
So I have had different people that have different experiences. You know, one of my very first employees was a guy that had, you know, done a lot of building in his time. But I mean, you know, in the end, I learned that there's kind of a difference between, you know, like construction style building and what we're doing with manufacturing, yeah, where, you know, there's more process oriented, and also the management tier as well. So, and about 2 years ago, we hired a gentleman, his name's Chris. He still is here. He worked for GM. So that was, you know, I kind of started to understand that there was more to this than, you know, what I could figure out quickly. And in the meantime, you know, I was trying to build, you know, 10 vehicles a month or whatever. So I hired some expertise, and that's been great, because he's, you know, really been able to come in and help us and find some weak, you know, help us with some of our weaknesses, there. And then on, you know, like the prototyping and all that kind of side, I did hire JT, my chief engineer. And I mean, he's amazing just to watch him, you know, kind of go through and figure out how to make molds and all that kind of stuff. He just had that background that, you know, I understood it from theoretical aspect, but I didn't have the hands-on experience, for example, of making a mold. So the first mold I made was the one for the pop-up top, and it was a 12-foot long, you know, 2-foot high mold. This is not probably the first one that most people would make. So, but, you know, JT has been building production in ships, boats, sailboats, that kind of stuff. So he'd built large molds and stuff like that. So yeah, between those two guys, I definitely have had access to some bigger expertise. And then as we look to the future, that pattern kind of continues where, you know, right now we're building, you know, between 5 and 10 vehicles a month, and we kind of want to go to that next level. And I definitely see where we're going to need some outside expertise to help us get to the 100 vehicle a month level.
So I was going to say, yeah, what do you see, you know, kind of what changes do you see, or what are your goals for 2022?
So in 2021, we had kind of a crisis in the auto industry, probably worldwide, but certainly in the US. Basically, the big vehicle manufacturers, you know, didn't have enough chips to make their vehicles. So Ford's still not saying what the total carnage was for 2021. But, you know, we know that we didn't get very many of the vans that we normally would get from them. We buy wholesale from them as our chassis supplier. And 2022, to be honest, is not looking that much better. We're doing fine. We're keeping our heads above the water. But what we did in 2021 is we kind of doubled down on R&D, so that, you know, our plan is, you know, we're going to keep everything on, keep the lights on, keep working on getting better at production. And then when the vehicles become readily available again, then we'll be able to, you know, jump on that. So that's kind of what we see ourselves doing. And we kind of see it in two different paths. One path is just ramping up the manufacturing that we have now. We have plans to build a much larger facility. Right now, like I said, we're somewhere between 5 and 10 vehicles a month, depending on the complexity and chassis availability. We're hoping to build a facility that will get us to the 100 to 200 vehicles a month. So that's a pretty big jump. So we have some pretty big plans there. And then at the same time, on the R&D side, we've already begun, and we're going to start pushing really hard on a truly electric version of our RV. So one of the great things that we've been able to do this year is we went from one model to two models, and then we added a whole bunch of electronics, which kind of makes it 6 models total. And that has been a great learning process for us. So you were talking about the lean startup approach earlier, or MVPs. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I feel very strongly about is, and this comes from my background in software as well, is, you know, I don't want to spend a lot of effort building the wrong thing. And so, you know, in manufacturing, the cost is even more severe. You know, you spend so much money, tooling, dies, all these different things. And imagine you spend all that money and you build this vehicle and nobody cares about it. You know, you're just like, you know, it wasn't what we wanted. So what we are doing is we're using our experience now to inform, you know, with these 3 models and learning, to inform where we're going to go as we make these bigger investments, particularly in the electric RV. So I feel like we built these 3 models, and we're going to take the best of all them and then kind of distill the essence of it into it. And then in the EV platform, what's really exciting is getting rid of the motor for us. I mean, it's just coincidence, but for us, you know, not having that big motor sitting, either in the rear or in the front really opens up some great design possibilities just because of the way the human body works and the size of the vehicle and the size of the roads and parking spaces that everybody has to have.
Yeah, that sounds exciting. Yeah, that sounds really, really brilliant. Thank you. A couple of quick questions to wrap up then. That's been amazing so far. Do you have any tools or techniques that you feel has helped you on the way to building ModVans up to where you are today? I guess you've mentioned a couple with the kind of, agile processes and kind of lean startups. So, something as broad as that or something like, more specific.
So, we'll go back to like the startup, because there's different things. The startup, I definitely recommend the lean startup approach. And there's a book, The Lean Startup, it's Eric Ray's. Yeah. I get people all the time. They're like, can you tell me what I should do about my business? And I'm like, the first thing you need to do is read this book and then let's talk about it. And unfortunately, the engineering mindset is the wrong approach. In many cases, it's like to get really focused in on the thing that they want to build and then try to build it. So, but that leads to building the wrong thing, unfortunately, in many cases. And so the lean startup is like, how do we start selling before we have that? And so, for example, if I could have done even more lean, I just happen to have a vehicle that I built for myself, but I could have only built the website with renderings and I could have gone to try to sell that. And, I have a lot of friends and I've been building a lot of connections in the hardware community. And so now when I have somebody who's like, I got this great idea. And I'm saying, well, lucky you, the world has become a place that is perfect for this type of thing. And the reason is because Kickstarter and, these kind of platforms exist where you can go and you can figure out if you can gain market acceptance. And there's already a crowd of people that know what Kickstarter is and they understand it. And you can go out on those platforms and you can try to sell it and see how well you get that, because nothing is going to be sadder for you to get halfway through, the manufacturing process, run out of money and not know if you would have had a market acceptance. And this way you can at least start knowing that you have market acceptance and work backwards. Let's say you do run out of money in the middle. Well, there's, if it was good enough, maybe you can find somebody to give you the rest to finish. A lot of doors open. Now, the reality is that a lot of engineers and very product-oriented people, they don't want to hear that message. So my son's that way. He always has these great ideas. I'm like, let's make a Kickstarter page, So you push the marketing first. But I think the lean startup and, as exemplified by Kickstarter for hardware in particular, is a very powerful approach and can save a lot of time and effort and energy if you're willing to tackle it that way. And then on the sales side, if you want to get more links later, I have great resources for enterprise sales, because I know that backwards and forwards. And that kind of applies to what we're doing here, because I was telling you about the early adopters. So there's still, that happens in enterprise sales where we were selling, security systems to the Fortune 500. Yeah. But in products like consumer products, it's still the same thing. In the beginning, I had to find out of that pool of 2,000 people that were interested in a vehicle like this that I had spoken to, I had to find that pool of 10 early adopters. And for me, it was better to really understand that up front, that that's what I was looking for, rather than be disappointed that these, out of the 2,000 people that actually called or emailed me, I only got a few that signed up. That's actually the way it normally works. That's the normal distribution of consumers. Yeah. The early adopters are the people that can look at your solution, imagine for themselves how it could fit their personal problem, and then be willing to take a risk, right? Because that's what it boils down to. And then, later, after you've conquered the early adopters, then you can get into that hump. So there's some resources that I could share with, how to learn that sales cycle. And I think they've been very useful in ModVans.
Yeah, that brings to mind like crossing the chasm. That's like the big principle in that book, isn't it? That, first go for the early adopters, but it will be a completely different sales process for the kind of the early majority, or as the market kind of moves along.
Yeah, the exact same thing. Yep. So we talk about technical tools if you want. We've been using Fusion 360 here. We know all it's, I was probably the foremost user, because it's a relatively new product, Fusion 360. I think as we used it through, we definitely kind of see its weaknesses and strengths. Yeah, it's an interesting tool. I really do love the idea of being able to integrate 3D CAD with the computer-aided manufacturing. So whether it's 3D printing, CNC, code generation, three-axis, five-axis, all those things, being able to have one tool, so much more efficient than, trying to learn, two almost totally different tool sets. But, at the same time, you have the darkness, which is, the Fusion 360 tool set is very immature. It's still immature. So you have to kind of put up with that. For us, it was a really great fit to start. And then as we mature, the good news is we kind of have the capability to look out there and see, what's next for us is in terms of, we're kind of ran out of horsepower with Fusion, but now there's these other platforms. They're way more expensive. They're way more complicated, but we kind of have the available resources to tackle that. So that would be another thing that I think was, when I chose it, I kind of knew I was choosing something new. And my attitude was the startup attitude. Well, they're giving it away for free for a year. I'll just try it and I'll keep using it until it doesn't work anymore. And at least if nothing else, I'll know what not to buy the second time. Yeah. And here we are, 4 years later, we're still using it. So.
Yeah. Great. Cool. Yeah. That sounds interesting. Yeah. My first job was doing CAD models and then going down to a laser cutter, a plasma cutter and a press brake and manually programming each one of them separately to translate my CAD drawings into each of those. And
yeah, brutal.
It was painful. Yeah. That was painful.
So yeah. and so I was able to bypass that, right? I just like, okay, it's the exact same interface you use to click on the things in the 3D CAD is the same interface that you used. I mean, you still have to learn something about CAM, but it's a lot easier when you don't have to learn, the G code and how it all relates and stuff. I would say probably my physics background helped. Just having a general idea of what 3D coordinate systems are tool paths, I get it. You cut it a certain way and it's going to work better than if you just try to go for broke and go straight back and forth or whatever. There's a, adaptive machining and those kind of techniques make sense to me on a physics basis.
Yeah, cool. Great. Any last two here? What are your favorite book recommendations at the moment? We were talking about Elon Musk before.
Yeah, I really like that SpaceX book. So I can try to find it real quick. But yeah, the most recent book on SpaceX, I just thought it was just, to me, I mean, I'm of course biased because, my startup background and manufacturing and, even vehicles, but, I thought it was a really compelling story for what it was. I mean, I read a lot of history books, so, those can be super compelling if the characters are, involved in world-changing events. But for me, just like, the whole idea of those guys out in the island going for broke, they've spent all their $100 million and it's all down to one more launch, if it blows up, they are all going to go home with their, with their years invested in their lives, working 14-hour days, which I can totally relate to. And they're all going to have to go home with their head in hands, or it could work out the other way. Now we all know how it worked out, but it was like a exciting and compelling tale. I thought the guy did a really good job on it. So we'll dig up the exact name of that book for you.
Nice. That'll be great. That sounds like a brilliant recommendation. And last one then, what's the best way for people to find out more about Modvans or just to get in touch or reach out to you?
Sure. The website is www.modvans.com. We have a little joke about that because when I went to go register the domain, I couldn't get Modvan. Somebody had it with no S, right? But for $10, I could get Modvans with an S. So we have a little joke. It's like, I cheaped out and got the Modvans with an S because it was only $10. So anyway, they come to website modvans.com or you can find me personally on LinkedIn. And I don't know if I can always be this way, but right now, if you write me, I'm pretty much going to write you back. I think people are shocked sometimes. They're like, I wasn't expecting him to write five paragraphs back to me about whatever my question was, but that's kind of my style. I don't know if I'll be able to keep it up forever, as we get more customers or whatever, but I just enjoy talking to people, whatever it is, just having a chat and batting ideas back and forth. And if I can help, that's great. I sincerely hope I can help. I know some, always my advice isn't relative or whatever, but nothing else. We have good conversation.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Thanks a lot for your time today, PJ. Really, really interesting to hear about what you guys are doing at the moment. I'm really excited to see where it goes next. So, yeah, thanks.
Yeah, thanks for having me on the show. I appreciate it. It's been fun.